Pink Lemonade Stand.
Welcome to the Pink Lemonade Stand. I'm your host, Heidi Webster, and I'm so glad you're here today to get a little zest in your step.
Excuse me?
I just wanted to say a quick thank you for listening. Thank you all so much. And if you are enjoying the Pink Lemonade Stand podcast, I ask that you share it with a friend or make sure that you're subscribed. Hit that subscribe button and make sure that every Monday morning, these episodes are going straight to your phone so you don't miss anything. And whenever you get a chance, leave a review. It makes a huge difference for the podcast world. And so I want to read a review that was given by M. Dulcimoscolo. It says, if you're looking for a feel-good, pick-me-up style podcast full of inspiring stories and endless laughs, look no further. Thank you so much, M. Dulcimoscolo. I really appreciate your feedback, and I would love to hear more from all of you. So remember to RRS, rate, review, and subscribe. Okay, I have an amazing episode for you today. We have William Joseph here at the stand. He is a world-renowned piano prodigy. He tells some really fun and amazing, insane stories of how he started playing the piano when he was so little, just like a little baby. And he was discovered by David Foster. He shares behind the scenes of how that happened. He shares the stories of his really exciting and crazy music videos where he puts a piano in all sorts of places all over the world. And he shares some really inspiring life lessons from some scary disappointments that he had in his life. So really fun episode. Stick around. But before we do, I have a really sweet good news story for you today to give us all the good feels. So it's time for
the sweetest thing.
Well, it's really difficult to think about good news this week when we've had such an emotional roller coaster with the news of the shooting in Texas. I know that a lot of us have been struggling to even put words together as to what happened and how to move forward. So for today's good news story, I wanted to share something that really stuck out to me in the midst of this really tragic week that we've had. And I found this story on Tank's Good News Instagram page. If you're not following this already, make sure that you do. It's at Tank's Good News. It's really uplifting. You can find really great content on there. And this week has been it's just been hard to formulate words or thoughts and know how to process this and move forward and really extend yourself in the right way that's meaningful. So when I read this post, it really brought a tear to my eye, and I thought I would share it today. The post was from a tweet from at Aaron M. Douglas 23. She tweeted, "Today in the Starbucks drive-thru line in Uvalde, Texas, the barista asked if I was taking time to care for myself. I told her that I would keep trying, and then I returned the question. She said she actually works in San Antonio, but is working here so that Uvalde baristas have time to grieve." I thought this was so incredibly beautiful that we got a little insight into somebody who is doing something small that is actually quite big for people in need. That this barista who works in a completely different city that's a few hours away, I think it's a few hours away, drove to Uvalde, Texas to fill in for people who are working at that Starbucks so they can take the time that they need off from work. And this was so very inspiring to me that it's these little things that we can do to help. And in times like this, where the grieving is so big and is so heavy, what can we do to rally around each other and help each other and take care of each other? I thought this was incredibly mindful, and I hope that we are all doing that, exactly what the barista asked, taking time to care for ourselves, checking in on each other. And in times of need and in times of grief, we often don't know what to do and we don't know what to say. But I think that the bravery is necessary that we dive in and try and do just that and learn those things and how can we help and what can we do and taking action. So this was just a beautiful good news story. I'm going to post the link to this in the episode notes so that you can see this beautiful tweet and reshare it if you want to. And if any of you have good news stories that you want to share, we love to hear them. And we know there's so much good out there, just like this sweet barista from Uvalde, Texas. We want to highlight these zesty stories. So please email me at theplspodcast@gmail.com and send in your sweetest things. And now it's time for
The Main Squeeze.
William Joseph is one of the most electrifying pianists, composers, and producers of our time. He was a child prodigy that began writing music and played solo performances at the age of 5. William's collaboration with David Foster led him to share the stage with John Legend, Michael Bublé, Natalie Cole, Barbra Streisand, Alicia Keys, and that's just naming a few. David Foster co-produced his first two albums, Within and Beyond, which led to several concert arena tours with Josh Groban and Il Divo and more. William has produced records with Grammy-winning artists and also produces live performances with huge artists all over the world. I cannot wait for you to meet him. He is a treasure. He is a wonder. He is a dear friend of mine. Please welcome to the stand, William Joseph!
Thank you. Wow. Wow, there's like a lot of people in there.
Oh yeah, they are cheering for you.
Oh my gosh, so good to see you.
Welcome, I'm so glad you're here. I'm so glad you're doing this. And it's so fun to like read back your bio. It's like so many amazing things.
Well, none of it's true, so it's...
you hired someone great to write that bio. Oh my gosh. Okay. So you are in Arizona right now, correct?
I live in Phoenix, Arizona, born and raised and still living here and just traveling everywhere.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, I'm going to tell our listeners right now that I'm originally from Phoenix, Arizona, and that is where William and I met as wee little babies.
We go way back,
high school, teenagers, and we actually did music together when we were little, like the littlest kids, just like tinkering around.
No, it's so fun that we're both still doing this and now professionally. And it's so fun to just come back as friends. And
we need to dig up our old tunes.
Ooh. Can we feature those? There's some seriously hilarious things that we did, but really cool things too. So
where are they? Like, they must be on like hard drives that are probably the size of a shoebox, you know, like those old.
I know. I actually listened to a few things on a road trip like a couple of years ago, and I found them and I was just like cracking up, and I don't know, it was just so fun and so great to see what you're doing now.
Oh my gosh. I cannot thank you enough for being here. I want to dive right in. I want to start from the beginning. You basically were like a musician, like out of the womb. Like this is a rare kind of musical gift that just doesn't come along very often. So I want to talk about what it was like for you just being like a young child, like a young music prodigy, and what it was like learning that you had these gifts and talents for music. Like, when did it start?
So the story goes, I was 4 years old and my favorite show came on TV. It was Fraggle Rock. And I loved the little Jim Henson. Anyway, so this Down in Fraggle Rock song came on and I loved it. And I threw my little toy piano in front of the TV and I started playing along with it, both hands. And my parents were standing behind me and they were like, what the heck? We should get him lessons. And so this is so insane. They opened the phone book. They had no connections to anyone in the music world. They opened the phone book and they look under piano lessons. And the first person they called happened to be this graduate from Leningrad Conservatory in Russia, like this amazing classical teacher. And so that was who I started taking lessons from and ended up taking lessons from her until I graduated high school. So it was
4 years old.
Started at 4 and went all the way until I was 18. So I've been doing recitals and performances since I was 5, you know, class recitals. And then I started performing. When I was 8, I ended up getting a national scholarship through the Boys and Girls Club. And that paid for all of my lessons, music camps, books, concerts, wow, everything. And so once I received that scholarship, they started plugging me into performing at like major fundraising events and things like that. So, you know, when I just remember when I was 8, I performed for 1,000 people, which was so terrifying. And I'm like in like a little tux with tails, And I'm like, my feet are like shaking. I'm at the piano. And I remember, I think I was like sitting on phone books or something, like just to like.
No.
So it was, I don't know. It's been a crazy journey. And I've just like, I've been doing music as long as I can remember.
For that performance that you did when you were 8 for like 1,000 people, do you remember what you played?
I played a song that I wrote. I think I played a song that I wrote and one other song. I can't remember. All I remember is I didn't like the food and I wanted to go to McDonald's afterwards.
That was your takeaway.
Yeah.
So how did you start doing like paid kind of performances for events and stuff at that age, or how old were you when that started?
Good question. So I kept performing since I was about 8. It was about when I was like 12 or 13, I went and I played in a retirement home. And next thing I, like over the next few years, I turned it into like this business where, you know, being in Phoenix, I'm right by Sun City and like all of these retirement areas. And so it became a part-time job all the way through high school. And so actually, that's where I got really comfortable performing. I remember this lady in, and this is not to be disrespectful, but this lady like kind of wheeled up to me in a wheelchair. And while I was playing, like took a swing at my hand. And I was like, you know, playing and like dodging out of the way. And she was quickly wheeled away. And again, no disrespect to the situation, but I learned to roll with things. Like I learned, like, you know, people would, there would just be disruptions and crazy things that would happen. And I just learned to be flexible and adapt to the situation. And so I ended up, I realized after performing for a few years at all of these retirement places, I felt really comfortable being in front of people. Mm-hmm. And I was like, bring it, like, let's just have fun. And so that was really, I felt like how I got my performing chops, just performing on a consistent basis. So.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Well, nursing homes are always, you know, parties. Like you never know what you're going to get.
Seriously.
Never know what you're going to get. Okay. So one of the things that I thought was so unique about your performance as a young person was that you taught yourself how to play the piano upside down. I have to bring this up because it's so unique. And you would lay on the piano bench and play the piano with your hands above your head. And so I want to hear the story about how you learned how to do that and at what age you started doing that.
Okay. So I think I was about 9 years old. And my dad and I were watching the movie Amadeus, you know, about Mozart. It's like this old movie. And in the film, they're at a party and Amadeus is at this harpsichord and he's being held by his friends. And then they flipped him up upside down and he crossed his hands and he was playing upside down with his hands crossed. And my dad and I were watching this and my dad jumps off the couch and he's like, son, go do that. And so I was like, okay. And so I went in there and I turned the bench and I like lay down and I position myself and try and figure it out. And it basically started then. And from that moment. And so it's been kind of like, it became like almost the performance party gag that I would do when I was out performing. And so it was just funny because I started realizing the value of entertainment. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'd be working on these massive pieces or these concertos and like performing these really, really intense things. And, you know, it would get a good reaction. And then if I played upside down, oh, it was over. That was like, that was way cooler than any of those, you know, those massive pieces that I'd been pouring my life into for months. So I started seeing, you know, kind of what the masses or you know, what the general population would respond to. Mm. And just, I was like, okay, I gotta be entertaining as a performer.
Do you still play upside down?
I do. I'll bust out every once in a while. It's definitely fun to do.
I love it. That's like one of my favorite things too. When I first saw you do that, it was pretty mind blowing. I think the average person is like just like stunned, like, oh my gosh, he's flipped. People can't comprehend it. You ended up playing for so many concerts as a young person, which is very unique in itself, you know, playing for big stages at 8 years old. That's very cool. But at some point, you eventually ended up getting discovered and having this really stunning professional career. So tell us the story about how that happened and what it was like for you breaking into the music business.
When I was about 21, 22 years old, I was trying to figure out how in the world to make a living as a piano player. I ended up getting a manager, and long story short, that manager called me one day and said, I have an opportunity for you to meet David Foster. He's actually coming through Phoenix for a big charity event that he's heading up, and he's going to be having Rod Stewart and Reba McEntire and all these A-list performers, and you need to show up at this time during rehearsal just so you can meet him. And so I showed up with my little CD, not knowing what was going to happen, hoping I could just shake the guy's hand and give him a CD and be on my way. And I showed up one afternoon when he arrived, and he was having the sound check, and I was introduced, and the person that introduced me said, David, do you mind if William just plays your piano really quickly? And I didn't know this was going to happen.
Oh,
and so
gosh.
David's like, yeah, sure. So he brings me up on stage with his world-class band as Rod Stewart's passing me by getting off the stage. I'm like, hey, Rod, you know? And and so I get up on stage, and David looks at me and he's like, play something. And so I started playing this upbeat song that I wrote.
Played Upside Down. I'm just kidding.
No, I didn't play Upside Down. But I start playing the song that I wrote, and he starts conducting to the rest of the band that was sitting on the stage. And the next thing I know, this rock and drum fill comes in, and the band just starts spontaneously playing with me and rocking out to the song. And David's conducting, and I'm like praying, like, please don't mess this up. And so when I finish, David was like, what was that song? And I said, I wrote it. And he said, you're going to come back tonight and you're going to open the show with that song.
Ah!
And I was beside myself. I couldn't believe it. And so the next thing I know, I'm in the back of a semi truck with a couple of musicians and the music director, and they're charting out the song and asking me like, okay, do you want strings with this and guitar? And I'm like, I mean, it sounded like a fast food order. I was like, yeah, I'll take some strings with that and a guitar on the side and some little drums. And we're just charting everything out. And so the next thing I know, after we charted out, we run back out on stage. We go through the song one time, and that was it. And David said, I'll see you tonight. Good luck, and don't choke. I was so nervous and shaky. I could barely dress myself when I got home, just getting ready, because I knew like what a huge opportunity this was. And so I came back that night, and he told the whole story. He's like, I met this kid today. And anyway, it ended up just being a hit that night. And we ended up exchanging info. And then I set up a meeting with him out in his palace in Malibu. And, he said, I want to sign you to Warner Brothers as my next artist. He was the senior vice president of Warner Music at the time. And so it was,
wow,
it just started becoming a whirlwind. And from there, he said, oh, and by the way, I've got an opportunity for you. You're going to tour and open for Josh Groban. And everything took off from there.
You're like, I need to think about it.
Like, hang on. I actually have some retirement gigs that might get in the way of that tour. So if we
have a commitment to Sunrise Assisted Living, and I took my contract.
I'm going to have to see if we can reschedule. So.
Oh my gosh, that story. Wow, what an opportunity that just doesn't come every day, you know? Like,
no, I seriously couldn't have written that story. I mean, it just sounds too good to be true. And even retelling it, I get excited again. Like, I can't believe that happened. And I'm just so thankful. But it really, that became the turning point and of my life and my career. And a lot of people talk about overnight success and all these different things. And I'm just thankful. I'm thankful every day for my parents and like pushing me for all of those years, my teacher for all of those years, the Boys and Girls Club who sponsored me, who set me up for all of those years for that one moment. And I just, I feel like I take it in as this life lesson, like, you know, we might only get a couple of major opportunities and we just got to be prepared and hope that we're ready for those moments when they come, you know?
Oh my gosh, that just gave me the chills. But it's true, like the quote unquote overnight success saying is most definitely not overnight. Like you said, you've been working and playing the toy piano when you were four. It started there.
It started there.
It started with that Fraggle Rock melody. that's so amazing. And really, we're all glad you didn't choke, because what a great career you've had since then and so many opportunities. So what was it like from there? I mean, you've toured with so many big artists and you've done so many amazing things. So share with us some of your favorite highlights from your career and what you've done so far since that moment.
I mean, the first tour was a highlight. I'd never even done like a concert, you know, like an event or anything. So touring with Josh Groban was amazing. And I was a brand new artist. So here, Josh Groban had one of the biggest tours that summer, and semi trucks and arenas and video walls and things like that. And here I had been doing retirement homes. I also played the organ for the Arizona Coyotes, you know, like doing the little and like fun things like that. So I literally went from that setting to being on the road with Josh Groban at this major concert. And, you know, like you said, that kind of set everything up and turned into collaborating with a lot of different artists. So it's kind of turned into more like, especially these last several years, I've done so many of these events with David Foster, who is a master at presenting all these different artists. Mm. And I've been one of those many artists, you know, these lineup of artists that he's brought out at these shows. And so I've recently, these last 5-6 years, I've been being brought in for big events to kind of play that role as musician, but also host. And so I'll come out and I'll play, and then I get to pick and choose who I'm bringing on these gigs, and then I get to bring them out and collaborate. So I've gotten to do things like with Catherine McPhee or the Tenors or like all these amazing artists. Wow. And it's so fun because I'll get to collaborate with them and just create these cool, fun moments. So it's fun because we'll pitch these crazy ideas and then people, you know, will say, okay, let's do it. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, now I got to go figure out all of this crazy stuff that I just pitched.
Now I got to execute.
But I love the creative side of things. Mm. And so it's really fun to create these moments.
You're very much a producer. You have the producer brain in addition to the musician brain, which is so cool that you're able to do these events. And speaking of crazy ideas and projects, you have done some amazing, wild, insane music videos that I swear you've taken your piano everywhere. A piano in the desert, a piano on fire, a piano in water, a piano in the back of a semi or in a truck. So tell us about some of those projects that you've done and maybe some wild highlights from some of your favorite music videos that you've done.
Sure. I definitely wanted to bring the adventurous side into the music videos that I do. And I had this crazy idea several years ago. I thought it'd be so cool to figure out a way to put a piano in the middle of a lake and build like an underwater stage, so it looks like the piano's sitting on the surface of the lake, and shoot it like an action movie or video. And so I would tell people this and they looked at me and they're like, deer in headlights. Okay. And so finally I shared this idea with one of my friends and he said, let's do this. And I was like, really? Okay, let's do this. And so my friend, my good friend, Dave, he's not even in the music business, but he's just super talented. And he's like this business logistical guru and just knows how to figure anything out. Anyway, next thing I know, we're in the garage building this underwater platform that my piano is going to be sitting on in the lake. And I say we loosely, like he was building it and I was like cheering him on. I'm
like, go, go. Good, Dave.
Yeah. So we did all this research to find the shallow lake. And so the next thing I know, we're driving my piano up with the stage to Utah Lake, which it's like about 6 feet deep. And we hired a crew and put this platform out in the middle of the lake. And wow. We had drones, jet skis, boats, everything. And we shot a music video out there and did a cover of Imagine Dragons' Radioactive. And it looked so crazy. And I'll never forget when I started posting pictures, like music video coming out soon. And everybody's like, oh, cool, CGI, that looks so fake. And and that's when I knew it was going to work so well, because I was like, this is real. Like, you know, like, CGI. It was so exciting. In fact, the local news actually came out. They're like, pianist has lost it. He's out in the middle of the lake. And like, it was so fun. And
wow.
And it turned out, and it went viral. And you just have to, even now, just Google piano in a lake and it'll come up.
Is it really? Oh yeah. My gosh. Yeah. Piano in a lake.
So that was one fun one. And gosh, another one, there was one that totally got a lot of attention. It went super viral. It was a song that I loved. And I actually used to play it in retirement homes. It was Metallica, Nothing Else Matters.
Yes.
And I would play that in retirement homes thinking it was so funny. And people would come up to me like, what was that beautiful song? And I'm like, it's by a group called Metallica.
And, thank you, dear.
Yes. And so I just thought, I want to do this as a cover. And so I ended up doing this as a music video, and this concept of having two locations. One was in a warehouse and one was outside. And we showed it start raining like all over me and the piano and everything outside. And then when it cut to the in the warehouse, then it all of a sudden started raining in the warehouse. And so I was being drenched in these shots. And so that was kind of a fun thing to do. Don't worry, no pianos were harmed.
I was just going to ask, when you do these wild scenarios, where do you get the pianos? Because I'm sure, I mean, are they shells or how do you do it?
So the one that was in the lake, that was actually a real piano. So it was like an 800-pound piano. We just bought it. We just bought it locally from someone. And then my brother's actually this incredible artist, and he reshaped the piano so it looked like it came to a point, and it looked like it had a fin on my bench, and he did an epoxy finish on the top. So it looked like it was glowing in the sun. Like, it just looked so cool. So we transformed that piano. And then the one that where we were pouring rain on us in Nothing Else Matters, that was actually a shell piano. Uh-huh. And I put one of my broken keyboards in there. I'm like telling the secrets now.
Revealed.
Yeah. So when we were making it rain and everything, we just literally took like a leaf blower and like blew off all the water when we were done. So it didn't ruin the shell of the piano.
Wow. You've done so many amazing concepts. And one other one I want to bring up is you did a collaboration with Lindsay Sterling.
Yes. So, yes.
Yes. Amazing collaboration. Tell us about that.
We did it. We actually did a couple of videos. She wanted to do this Halo, you know, she does a lot of these video game covers, and Halo was coming out. And so we just talked about doing this cover of the Halo theme song. And we were supposed to be out playing and kind of not battling each other, but it was playing. But then we had like all of these people running around in suits, like shooting at people. It was like this firefight, and it was really drastic. And I showed up, and the director gave me this fake gun. He's like, okay, now I want you to run and act like you're running with Lindsay and protecting her. And I'm like, you want me to run around with a gun shooting at people? Like, I did not know that this was going to happen. And so there's actually a couple of versions of this video. So I'm like running around with this gun and I'm like knocking people out. Like, I was not planning on that, but
your video game, like childhood dreams.
I know.
So, coming true.
But it goes back to that entertainment. It's like, so, you know, a lot of people wanted to see that kind of a thing. So anyway, it was fun working with her. And it was definitely when she was on the rise, and now she's got such a massive following, but it was so fun to work with her. And it's been a wild ride.
I think the cool thing about that collaboration between the two of you is two really amazing instrumentalist soloists coming together that have like risen to not only like internet fame, but just making a new genre of music popular that is cool for young people to listen to. That's like besides pop, besides R&B, you know, like to see people performing and using an instrument as their solo instrument is really cool. So you guys are both powerhouses in your genre. So to come together and like, you know, be in the forest, it's really cool.
Literally be in the forest. No, it was a great collaboration, and Lindsay's so creative and just fun. And like you said, she's definitely carved out her own niche, and it was fun to be a part of that. And it's fun to try and create my own path as an instrumentalist. And it's been a lot of fun.
So many fun stories. We've talked about so many amazing things today, and your career has been so wild and so exciting. And so now we've made it to our last question at the Pink Lemonade Stand. We talk about people's life challenges and how we turn lemons into lemonade in our lives.
It's
our specialty here. So we want to ask you, William, if you don't mind sharing, was there a time in your life that was challenging, and how did you get through it? What was that moment for you?
That's a great question. There have definitely been a lot of challenging moments. I would say if I had to choose one, after I was signed with Warner Music and David Foster, I had a whole team of people that were just helping with my career and just guiding it. And it was, the record company was the engine, and David Foster putting me in all these different places. And around 2012, after doing a couple of albums with David, the industry was changing so much. And we got to a point where the record company wasn't gonna renew my deal. Mm. And here I'd been riding that for a good 8 years and had this whole support. And so once that deal wasn't renewed, everybody jumped ship. Mm. Most people jumped ship. And that was terrifying, because I was thinking, okay, now what do I do? And how do I keep this going? And it was really hard to find the right team members that would be on. And so there's kind of a negative connotation in the industry. If, you know, if you get dropped from a label, or if they don't pick up a deal, or it's almost like you've got this little mark on you. And I was like, I don't know how I'm going to, I don't know what I'm going to do. Like, how do I move forward? I feel like I kind of felt defeated. Like, okay, I had my shot, and it didn't work well enough to be desired anymore. And so it really messed with me, and I was really concerned. And so after a few weeks of finding this out, I kind of just started looking at things in a different way. And all of a sudden I realized, I was like, well, wait a minute. I have all of these experiences. I've done all of these like tours, and I've worked with all these people, and I've got to make two albums with David Foster, and I got all of these different things. And they're literally just going to turn the website back over to me, my social media back over to me, everything. And I all of a sudden looked at it in a completely different way. Like, I feel like I have this gift of all of these different things that I get to just run with and do whatever I want. That's why I started making YouTube videos, because it was when the Piano Guys and Lindsey Stirling and all these different, the YouTube model was pretty new at that time as far as the launching artists. And so I just turned my attention and my focus in a different way, and just felt like, this is an opportunity. This isn't being dropped. You know, I get to do whatever I want. And so that was just a really scary moment for me. And I have not looked back, and I really see that as a good turning point And I'm so grateful for those opportunities because that really did set me up for life. And I just thought nobody can take away those experiences and those things that I've had. And now I have a team. It's just set up in a different way. And so it's been awesome.
Yeah. And you had the freedom to do exactly what you wanted or all these dreams that you had. Like if that hadn't happened, we wouldn't have got Piano in a Lake.
No, no. They would have told me all the reasons why that was a really bad idea.
It's so, too much money.
I know. Well, and it's just, I don't know. It's just, it's been really empowering. Mm. And it's given me a lot of confidence in just when you see a vision, just go after it and figuring out ways to go after it. And so I feel like I'm in a totally different headspace. Like, okay, what else do I want to do?
Ooh, I love it. I love it. And thank you for sharing that. I'm sure it was very scary when those moments happened and to look back on it and see where it took you now is really inspiring. And so tell us what's coming up. Like, do you have any projects that you want to share and tell us about anything new?
I actually have a few music videos that are going to be coming out over the next 6 months. I just scored my first film. It was an independent film and it's in the film festival circuit and it's actually been doing really, really well. And so I'm hopefully it's probably going to be making its way to Netflix or Amazon, you know, going through all of that soon.
Yes.
But that was really fun. I've wanted to score music for films my entire life.
What's the name of the film?
It's called America Boxed In. And it's an independent film and
amazing.
It was a lot of fun and I'm hoping to do more of the composing for films and
yes.
We'll see what happens.
I hope so too. I can't wait to see that film. I'm definitely going to check it out. And if it ends up getting, streaming somewhere, let me know. We'll post it in the episode notes. And so we can share it on all of our platforms. But now we've come to my favorite part of the interview. It's time to get juicy. We've got rapid fire questions for you, William.
Oh, no.
Want you to answer fast as you can. The first thing that comes to your head, I'm just going to ask you some questions real fast. Okay.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I don't know, but yes.
Okay. First question. If you were banished from living in the United States and had to go live in another country for the rest of your life, where would you go?
Australia.
What would you eat for your very last meal?
I would have Penang curry, like a Thai dish.
Ooh. Okay, if you were forced, would you rather skydive or bungee jump?
I think I would do bungee jumping, but it'd have to be over water so that I could pretend like I had a chance of living if something
happened. Okay. If you could perform on any world stage in the world, what Ooh. Stage would it be and with who?
Ooh, that is a good question. I would say the Hollywood Bowl with John Williams.
Ah! I literally guessed in my head he's going to say Hollywood Bowl.
Are you serious?
Yes, yes. Oh. Oh my gosh. Okay, next question. What song could you listen to over and over again and never get sick of?
Ooh, this is a lot of pressure.
It's so much pressure. You have to pick one.
Dang it. There's actually a classical piece that I love. It's by Rachmaninoff and it's Concerto Number 2 in C minor. And it's the first movement of it. And it's just, there's all of these hauntingly beautiful themes that just, it's just gorgeous. And I feel like I could listen to that forever.
Great answer. Okay. Last question. If you could never play the piano again, would you rather be a professional harmonica player or a professional triangle player?
No. I'm going to have to go with the harmonica because I would need a melody.
Good answer. Oh my gosh, you did it.
Yes. I love it. And thank you again.
You did it. You did great. Oh. Okay. Tell our listeners where they can follow along with you and keep up with all of your amazing, cool things.
The best place is probably my Instagram. It's William Joseph Music. actually, just go to williamjosephmusic.com and you'll find out everything.
williamjosephmusic.com. We're going to post all of this in the episode notes so people can click on the link. Thank you so much for sharing, like, snippets of your life story today and so vulnerably sharing very cool things and your lemons to lemonade moment. So, and thank you for being at the Pink Lemonade Stand.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so fun to see you, Heidi, and yes, it's been forever, and what a fun way to reconnect.
It's so fun. Thank you so much. Now we have saved the zest for last. This is where I talk about some of the things I am obsessed with this week. And, ooh, I got a good one for you. Okay, so I have a candy obsession, a sugar addict to the max. So me and some of my friends have been absolutely obsessed with this new candy at Trader Joe's. And it's not even new at this point. It's been out for a couple months. But I have got to say it so that you guys can go get this. It's called Cinna Dragons Gummy Candy. Okay, have you ever had like cinnamon bears? This is like cinnamon bears, but for some reason, why is it so good? Why is it even better? They're shaped like dragons. So Cinna Dragons, there you go, from Trader Joe's. Soft and chewy gummy candy. I don't know why they're so good. The texture is crazy. Like if I buy a bag thinking, yeah, I'm just going to get this bag of Cinna Dragons, I put them in my cupboard, forget it. If I open up that bag the same day, they're gone. The whole bag will be gone. So beware. I'm promoting it, so I want you to try it, but please be warned and beware that you will finish the bag in 5 minutes. So go check it out. It's at Trader Joe's. It's like $2.30, the best $2.30 of your freaking life. I'll post the link in the episode notes. Okay, that's our episode today. I'm so happy that you were here. Thank you so much for stopping by the Pink Lemonade Stand. I will be here every single Monday morning. I would love it if you would squeeze that subscribe button, leave a 5-star review, and follow along on Instagram at the PLS Podcast for some more sweet treats throughout the week. Now, when you're feeling like an old bitter rind, remind yourself that you are a gorgeous, delightful, and fabulous glass of pink lemonade. Oh yeah, and don't forget, you better go out there and squeeze the day. Bye.
Pink lemonade. Stay.